from New York City, it's the Gary Noll Show. And now, your host, Gary Noll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. Today, we're going to hear from Peter Koenig. He is a former World Bank top person, and he explains neoliberalism and how it's destroying the world. And this is for those who believe that we should be excited and optimistic by having a few, and I believe, sincerely populist candidates. But I've been looking at what they're saying, and they're clueless. They just do not have the understanding of the body politic in Washington, who controls the system, and how even young idealists are frequently compromised or marginalized. So that leaves the rest of us believing that because some young idealist, a handful, against this entire body, and behind that, the backdrop of five pharmaceutical lobbyists for every member of Congress. Behind that, 1,000 consultants or people working within the military-industrial complex, the pharmaceutical complex, and other complexes that control our country, all living together. So you're dealing with about 3 million people who benefit from war, benefit from coups, benefit from nothing changing. That's why they wanted Hillary Clinton to be elected. That would have been the best thing for Wall Street and for Big Pharma. She supported everything that's wrong with the world. So how did we miss it? This is a question I'm asking now at the beginning of our program before we get to health, nutrition, and other things, so you can have a chance to think on it and call in at 888-874-4888 and share your thoughts. I'm interested to hear what you have to say. And again, here's my question. If we have irrefutable proof that Obama and Clinton and Bush Senior and Junior and Reagan and Ford, not Jimmy Carter, but to some degree Jimmy Carter. Remember who his national security advisor was. Remember what he did with dirty deals in South America and Afghanistan and arming the Mujahideen, etc. But think about, and that was also Reagan, but think about all of the choices that they have made, that members of Congress had made, that put the world to where it is today. Do you really believe any of these people or any of their corporations care about global warming? If you do, then look at the latest report that shows that the last year, the last 12 months, we've actually increased our carbon expulsion into the atmosphere, increasing global warming, increased it by 3.2%. And we're supposed to reverse it by over 50%. We increase it. Remember what I said 2 weeks ago? We will never change anything on the planet for the better. We can't. It's not humanly possible because it's not politically possible. And what's not politically possible is not humanly possible. Individuals can change, but no one ever changes the mountain. You can go around Mount Everest. You can try to climb it, but you're not going to change it. And we have this codified concept of unstated rules that when you've been invited into their group, and you benefit from the pleasures that they provide you and the protections and the sanitizing of your reputation, then nothing changes. So that is not being pessimistic. But why then would we turn around and vote for these people? Why? I'm not going to give my thoughts. I want to hear yours. And we just keep doing it over and over and over again. It does not matter whether it's a Democrat or Republican. That's the game they play because these are all people who are controlled. Remember what I said about 10 years ago? You're always selected before you're elected. It was Mrs. Harriman who selected Bill Clinton. It was then with Governor Winthrop Rockefeller, the governor, one of the Rockefeller brothers, governor of Arkansas, who then groomed him. It was through Fulbright, Arkansas senator, who gave him the scholarship, the Rhodes Scholarship. Do you really think that Bill Clinton was a bright guy? Whoa. Then check his academic background. Oh, you can't find it? You can't get his transcripts? You didn't get his thesis or anything else? Well, that's not by accident. He's not a very bright guy, but he's a very charming guy. But he was selected and groomed all along, and that's why he didn't end up in prison back in Arkansas. So what I'm asking is, why do we keep making the same mistake in perpetuity, and why don't we want to see anything changed by bringing in people who would really change it? What is it about us now? It's not about them. Obama yesterday, or the day before yesterday, said his biggest mistake as president was Libya. And everyone went, oh, that's good. He finally had his come-to-Jesus moment. No. The context was, if only we would have planned it better to control the outcome so that they would have had more control over the oil, more control over the resources. What about Gaddafi? He was completely innocent. He was sodomized and brutalized. 24 tons of gold and silver were stolen, and no one knows where it went. Over 50,000 Libyans were killed. A complete country destroyed. The number one country of the 54 countries in Africa, number one in health, number one in freedoms, number one in Islamic freedom for women, number one in advanced education, highest literacy rate. In fact, it was one of the five highest literacy rates in the world, higher than the United States, by the way, as a percentage of the population. No debt, no crime, the Paris of Africa. And it was personally two people who destroyed it all. And not a single time have they been criticized by the left, the corporate liberal community, and the media, as if it didn't happen. How do we allow that to happen? How? That's what I'd like you to call and share your points of view. 888-874-4888. Now, also, we're going to hear from a person who was on the inside of the World Bank, knew everything going on, was inside those meetings, and he had a change of heart, and you're going to hear him in a rare conversation at a forum in Greece. Also, I share the idea that we should not be afraid to debate on important issues. And one of the people in the media who does debate every single night is Tucker Carlson. I do not like the way he interviews. He interrupts his guests constantly. I don't like his attitude on a lot of issues. I believe that he is on the wrong side of many issues, but then he is also on some of the right sides. And I'm going to play you one of them. But we're going to break it down, what he's actually saying, when he's saying it. And I've never done this before, but I'm going to ask our engineer, when I say stop, to stop the tape, and then let's see what he says, because he says so damn many good things. This is one of the best commentaries I've ever heard anyone on television say, and you will never hear this on MSNBC or CNN, or you won't see this in the New York Times. So we're going to do that. I'm not having a guest. We have this extra time today to do this. Because from your emails, and we do read your emails, and from the feedback that we receive, you're interested in important topics, health and nutrition, absolutely environmental, right at the top. But right up there at the top, too, are social issues and challenging the power elites. And So for all the people, we're going to hit it today. We start with the University of Texas study, published in eBioMedicine, peer-reviewed journal, and it talks about quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, quercetin. Now, when you eat an orange, that white inner peel, that's quercetin. Same with a grapefruit. And you don't get a lot that way, but it's where it's at. An apple is loaded with quercetin, and even more is an onion. And remember, an onion a day, a raw sweet onion a day, keeps a stroke away because it naturally thins the blood, kills parasites, kills staph, still kills strep in the throat, kills candida in the intestines. I remember once all the people with full-blown AIDS or ARC came in at night. It was their choice. One day a guy came to me and he said, "Gary, we feel more comfortable if we're around other people, mainly gay people suffering from AIDS who are being treated. We have our own support system. So could we be treated in the evening?" I said, "Sure you can." So all the other cancer and arthritis and diabetes and dementia, all the other conditions were treated by our medical staff during the day. And I opened it at 8 in the morning, and I closed it at midnight. In fact, after I would come back from a Broadway show or Lincoln Center or movie, I'd stop there, and there'd be people in the de-stress room. And there was an artist, a very famous New York artist, who came in one day, and he wanted to give something back, and that was kind. And he painted the entire room as a tropical rainforest. Well, okay, then I went out and I got tropical plants, and I tropical bamboo curtains, and the whole room was just lush. And then we got aromatherapy and misters, so you would feel like you were in the middle of a tropical rainforest with music in the background of macaws and actual sounds, and a waterfall. Water wall, all this in this one room. And we had 12 chairs, and you go in, you lay back on these chairs, and you go into a zone of wonderful blissness. And it was free. I didn't charge anyone. Anybody could use it, and everyone used it all day long. At midnight, there'd be 12 people laying out in these chairs, just blissed out. And for people who had really stressful illnesses, it was also part of their therapy to go in there. But there was one big room at the Tri-State Healing Center down on 72nd Broadway, and that's where all the drips were. We had as many as 22 drips going on at once, and the attending nurse and physicians. And they'd be given every hour, they'd be given fresh-made juices, some very exotic juices. And there was one fellow who was really having a challenging time. He had just started. He had been only there for about 3 days. He'd come from Los Angeles. And it was interesting, his conversation. He said that he had heard about this place in the gay community, and that we were the only center that he knew of in the United States that treated people with AIDS-defining illnesses with only natural therapies, no medicines. I said, "That's correct." And he said that I asked, "Why are you coming from Los Angeles?" He said, "Because I've been in 5 support groups out there over the last 3 years, and every single person in the support group's dead." And they would have people from one of the, I won't mention the gay group, that would come in, not a nice group, this particular group, they're aligned with the pharmaceutical industry, and they kept pushing the people to do more drugs or different drugs. And he said that people were just dying, and no one paid attention. And he had advocated, and they told him, "You know, that's all nonsense. You got to take the drugs, antiretrovirals." Well, his partner died. And he said he went to the toilet, and he flushed all of his drugs down. He was so sick, he couldn't board a plane for a week. When he finally got to New York, he came there. And this was his third session, and he had a terrible case of thrush. It was so bad that the attending physician took a tongue scraper and went in and was scraping out, and it filled up a cup of thrush. out of his mouth, and that was now in his lungs, and that's how a lot of people died. So I said, I'm going to give you something you're not going to like, but it's going to be good for you. And he said, what is it? I said, it's a drink. We make it here, but you're getting a super-sized drink. Just sip it. That's all. Just sip it. Now, it's going to be a little bitter, so when you sip the bitter one, you can go over and here's another cup, and this is a different one, and this will change the taste. Well, he almost gagged. It was onions and garlic and ginger, raw, 12 ounces. That's a lot of juice, he felt like barfing many times. But at the end of that, the next day he comes back, he said, wow, he said, I could actually breathe today. My sinuses all night, mucus was coming out of my mouth, my nose, and you can't believe, it was like a giant purge. And a week later, he had no thrush in that we could find or measure in his body. All his candida was gone, including in his lungs. He could breathe. And I owe that to quercetin and the sulfurs, sulforaphane and the other chemicals, the natural occurring chemicals that are in garlic. So you can't find anything that's going to purge the body better than garlic and onions and ginger and lemon. Those three, and it's because of the different chemicals. Now, I'm not suggesting, and I don't want anyone going out there and trying that, because you're going to end up vomiting and you're going to end up with an upset stomach. This was a person who was near death, and it's called the laws of compensation. To the degree that someone has a gross imbalance, you must exceed that imbalance in the opposite direction in order to rebalance them. And so that's a one-on-one situation. But in a lesser way, a substantially lesser way, if you were to have yourself a half a raw onion a day, and you could squeeze some lemon juice on it, put some Himalayan sea salt on it, it's delicious. You could have it in a salad, chop it up, put it in baked potatoes. If you have some lightly sauteed garlic, maybe 3 tablespoons, and mix it into some brown rice or pasta. If you want some ginger, and saute some sweet corn and peas, and with ginger, and then put that into some brown rice. So you see, you can get it into foods in different ways throughout the day. Or you can put all that into a juice and dilute that juice with green apples and cucumbers in the morning and celery, and you drink that down. That was just a thought that came to me. And by the way, in that entire time, not a single person died of AIDS, but 8 of the 12 I put on an advanced protocol completely reversed their AIDS. I mean, there was no HIV, no infections, no disease. Their T cells were normal. They were completely healthy. And it was Arthur Ashe and Stokely Carmichael. Stokely was a friend. And Bill Tatum, the publisher of the Amsterdam News, who was hearing about this and did reports on it. And then I believe it was Doug Henderson, a lawyer, African-American, great intellect, and he then spoke with Tony Brown, and Tony Brown sent his medical team up and said, this is interesting, and they started having them on the program. Over the next 2 years, all 8 of those people were on that program. We had a press conference. 100 people from around the United States with their physicians and their medical records who had improved or reversed their AIDS conditions were there. Every member of the American media was invited. Every major scientific group was invited. Every AIDS group was invited. Not one single person attended. Ask yourself why. We were able to achieve what no one in the world had ever achieved, curing people with AIDS. Those people were alive and well and medically verifiable. Not a single word. Instead, attack. They would attack. Why? We're saving lives. I didn't even charge those people. 1,200 people I treated for free out of my pocket. It wasn't free. It cost me a couple $1,000,000, but I did it because I believed it was worth it. That's America, friends. Cure the incurable and you're attacked for it. Kill the people with the treatment that doesn't work and you're rewarded for it. Wrap your mind around that. Anyhow, this trial showed that quercetin was able to really benefit people with pulmonary fibrosis. And there's nothing in orthodoxy that does. And this was in collaboration with Wake Forest School of Medicine and the Mayo Clinic. They evaluated men and women diagnosed with mild to moderate fibrosis, and they received this quercetin, and it made a big difference. Now, from Beppu University in Japan, comes a study about eating more shiitake mushrooms. Shiitake, S-H-I-I-T-A-K-E. Why? It can reduce the effects of a high-fat diet. And that is important, especially getting down the harmful parts of your blood cholesterol profile. And lipids found in plant-based fats are different from those that are found in animal fats. Plant-based fats are anti-inflammatory. Fats in animal proteins and dairy are pro-inflammatory. And that's what they found in this study. So shiitake extracts, and by the way, shiitake is also an antiviral, and it's terrific for you as well. And there's also from the University of Louisville, there was a metabolite produced by your gut microbiota from pomegranates that reduces inflammatory bowel disease. Now, inflammatory bowel disease is huge in the United States. We're talking about millions of people have it. And they derived this metabolite, and it's called urolithin A, U-R-O-L-I-T-H-I-N-A. It's derived from pomegranates, but it's also in other berries. You can get it in blackberries, raspberries, blueberries, and strawberries. And it can reduce and protect against inflammatory bowel disease. So, something natural, and that communicates with your gut microbiome, and that then helps. And this was published in Nature Communications. Also, from the National Cancer Institute, published in Circulation Research, that higher beta-carotene, there's your carrots, there's your broccoli, there are your vegetables, especially colorful ones. The more you eat, the lower your death risk during the next 30 years. That is important. Quote, the December 7th, 2018 issue of Circulation Research published the findings of the National Cancer Institute of an association between higher serum levels of beta-carotene, a precursor to vitamin A, and a lower risk of dying during 31 years of follow-up. This involved 29,103 men who participated in the alpha-tocopherol beta-carotene prevention trial. Okay. So when your mother or father or grandmother says, eat your vegetables, they're helping add years to your life, and there's good science backing it up. And also from the Arizona State University, there's an essential nutrient that can help fight Alzheimer's across generations. In a study, researchers at the Biodesign Institute explored a safe and simple treatment for one of the most devastating and perplexing afflictions, that's Alzheimer's. And what they did is they looked at all the different aspects of Alzheimer's, and then they gave this nutrient, and the nutrient is a simple nutrient. It's not expensive. It's called choline, C-H-O-L-I-N-E, choline. It's remember the B complex, and I always suggest that it's taken with inositol, choline and inositol taken in equal amounts, and the beneficial effects of choline appear to be transgenerational, not only protecting the generation receiving it, but protecting future generations as well. And choline acts to protect the brain from Alzheimer's disease in at least two ways, both of which are explored in the new study. First, choline reduces levels of homocysteine, HOMO, H-O-M-O, cysteine, C-Y-S-T-E-I-N-E. That's an amino acid that can act as a potent neurotoxin and contributing to the hallmarks of Alzheimer's disease and neurodegeneration and the formation of amyloid plaques. and homocysteine is known to double the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease and is found in elevated levels in patients with Alzheimer's. And choline performs a chemical transformation converting the harmful, the bad, homocysteine into a helpful chemical, methionine. And secondly, homocysteine supplementation reduces the activation of what is called a microglia, glia. That means cells responsible for clearing away the debris in the brain. And while their housekeeping functions are essential to brain health, activated microglia can get out of control, as they typically do during Alzheimer's disease. And overactivation of microglia causes brain inflammation and can eventually lead to the neurons dying. So choline reduces the activation of the microglia, offering further protection from the ravages of Alzheimer's disease. And this was published in Molecular Psychiatry. So that's the latest. And I always try to bring you information from the finest research centers, published in peer-reviewed literature, advancing our knowledge of how to live a longer and healthier life. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to go to our new service. This new service is that if you have a question or a comment that you think is of value, then call this voicemail line and I will address it. The number to call, please write this down, 862-800-6805. Again, 862-800-6805. And I'm going to give you our listen live number because not always can you be by your radio or even a computer. So if you're out and about, just dial this number. 641-793-7091. 641-793-7091. And I want to thank the nearly 2 million listening downloads over live in the last 12 months. That's a lot of people. That's just one way people listen to the show, and that's not even in the top one. And also from our sister station in New York, WBAI, we had an outstanding number of people listening the other day over the internet on WBAI, which generally it's not high, but it was 642. That's a big number. That's actually more people listening over the internet of WBAI than listening to most of the shows on the station. And how many listen live? I'm guesstimating about 2,500 on WBAI. So that was, we don't know where those people came from, but glad they're there. So we're going to come back after the break right into some of our voicemails, and you can hear them and you hear my response.
Gary, thank you for having this service for us to call in and leave a message. My name is Max, and I'd like to know if you could perhaps maybe someday have a bunch of actors to illustrate, to go about some certain roles to illustrate a point, or certain points, i.e., have them act out a scene on how, what we could do if we have to refuse a vaccine from our doctors, if at some time we were to be forced to take a vaccine. Another also, these actors could also act out how we should confront our doctors when we need certain blood markers checked that they do not want to check, or that they tell us that Medicare or Medicaid does not cover. How do we demand these tests or these markers from them? Some of the markers that come to mind would be the homocysteine, the CK, CRP, D-dimer. I know you you recommended the homocysteine several times, and it's been my experience that when you're asking for this test, or many others for that matter, that's beyond the typical CBC, complete blood count, which is not that complete, but they oftentimes refuse you. I don't know if this is just with all doctors across the board, whether you're paying cash or whether you have a good insurance policy or whether you have Medicaid or Medicare. But nonetheless, if they refuse us, how should we confront this? How do we confront these doctors? Either you can tell us, or as I suggested at the beginning, maybe have actors act it out and we can watch them as if it's some sort of sitcom. Gary, thank you for all you do.
Okay. It's impractical to bring actors on to act it out, but it's a very legitimate question that you've raised. Here, and it's two separate issues. I'll take the first one concerning the vaccines. The more informed you are, the more evidence, quality evidence, scientifically valid evidence you have, the more likely you will be able to make a presentation to your doctor, assuming your doctor is open to that exchange. You are not forced to have a vaccine. There are nurses and physicians who will tell you that if you work in a hospital, you must be vaccinated. And now they're trying to make it mandatory that you get vaccinated before you can go to different schools. But there's also legislation that provides the public with a freedom of choice not to if they have religious or ethical grounds for declining that. Most people are not aware of that. If you're not aware of it, then you're not going to use it. There are also lawyers who specialize in just that. So here's what I would suggest. Please write this down. Later today, I will put on our website, prn.fm, the names and phone numbers and emails of those attorneys, since we're heard all over the world, but at least in the United States, wherever they are at, who defend the rights of people to decline vaccination, so you can be directly in communication with them and go to their websites and see what they say. Separately, we have over 52 separate articles done by scholars and research, myself, Richard Gale, and others, and these are fully footnoted, all from quality resources. And they are then vetted for their scholarship, meaning anything we say in any article must be challenged, and it is. It must be verifiable. Then it goes through our legal department, where lawyers review every single thing we write, and when they all sign off of it, then you hear it on the air, then you see it published. Now, why is that the case? Because I want what we do to be a matter of record, that you could take these into a court of law, and under cross-examination, you would win. So your doctor is not going to have one-tenth the insight that these articles do. So if you know you're going to meet with your physician, then take those articles, because they cover every single aspect of vaccination, safety, efficacy, flu vaccine, all of the vaccines, the hepatitis vaccine, which no child should receive. And you can make your argument and say, before you decide to go further this discussion on vaccine, I've done my homework. Would you please do yours? Because they get no training on vaccine safety and efficacy in medical school. You could also go a little further. They may not want it, but you could then give them a copy of any one of the four multi-award-winning documentaries I've done on vaccination, and one just this year, Deadly Deception, and then The Silent Epidemic, and Death by a Vaccination and Autism Made in USA. so you have the tools at hand. There's also a list, and I will put the list up today, of the 10 leading vaccine patient advocacy groups, like Barbara Lou Fisher's group, so that you will know that you're not alone in your struggles. So that's what you have to do. You have to be prepared, educated, and go in and with a legitimate but diplomatic and polite challenge to them. Put the burden of proof on them to know more than what you're presenting. And I don't know a physician on the planet that has more knowledge than what's in these. To the second question, every year, everyone over the age of 30 should have a blood profile that includes homocysteine, C-reactive protein, fibrinogen, and triglycerides. These are normally not tested. Sometimes triglycerides are, but the normal tests will not do these. And these are far, far more important than your standard SMAC test, especially homocysteine and C-reactive protein. If you have an elevation at 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 of homocysteine, you're at risk of heart attack or stroke, and it's silent. These are silent messengers within your body, produced by the liver, and these are very important for you to know that you're at risk. So, there are ways of lowering homocysteine. Vitamin B6, 25 milligrams. Vitamin C, 1,000 milligrams. Folic acid, 1 milligram methylated. B12, 1 milligram methylated. And trimethylglycine, TMG, 2,000 milligrams. You can bring a homocysteine down very quickly in 1 week and take yourself out of harm's danger. Not to know this is foolish. So once again, go up on PubMed, that's the government's official library of authenticated and legitimate medicine and research. Download why homocysteine, C-reactive protein, fibrinogen, and triglycerides are important to know, because all of them can create heart attacks and strokes when they're elevated. Take in the studies, don't overwhelm them. Show how many there are. Say, you know, doctor, there are 380 studies on homocysteine. If it's elevated, how can it increase your risk of heart attack? And then take them the abstracts of maybe three to five. So they see that you've done your homework, you're educated, and you know what you're talking about. Okay? And that's not difficult to do. A little bit of time on the internet can make a big difference. Also, I can't do it immediately, but within the next month, I intend to put the lists of names and phone numbers of all the complementary physicians in the United States up on my website. There is a gift to the public. Now, that does not mean I endorse any of them. I don't. But at least you know that these are people who will test you for these things. These are not automatically pro-vaccine people. And these are people who will look at your heart and your blood profile differently. And that way, at least you'll know who to go to. We'll play our next one. We have one more there.
This is Ms. Hernandez. I'd like to know whether you have or know of a cure for diabetic neuropathy. Please give me a call. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, diabetic neuropathy is very common. It's excruciatingly painful. It frequently causes disability in people. But don't look at the diabetic neuropathy as the issue. That's not. Look at diabetes as the issue, and then what creates diabetes? Lifestyle. You see, I don't start by having people just change their diet. That won't work. I've tried that. Instead, I ask people to change their perception of the choices they make. Is the choice you're making one based upon comfort or one based upon determination to be a healthier person? So if you want to be healthier, then you're going to make healthier choices, in which case diabetes will not be a problem, let alone one of the subgroups of diabetes, neuropathy. Diabetes is when your body cannot produce or properly use pancreatic hormone, insulin. And we know that insulin controls not just the amount of glucose, which is your blood sugar, but also the rate at which glucose is absorbed into the cells. Now, when you move, you're producing energy. Energy requires a replacement. Glucose produces energy. And the brain's only food is glucose. Therefore, you have to have a constant source of it. Otherwise, you suffer from some form of brain malfunction. Now, there's two types of diabetes. Diabetes 1, which is insulin-dependent diabetes mellitus, and type 2. And type 2 we generally refer to as adult diabetes. And I believe that diabetes in children is principally caused by vaccination, but that's a separate issue. So when it comes to looking at what you should do, the four things you should do is you've got to get rid of all refined carbohydrate, all high glycemic foods, meaning foods that digest very fast and raise your blood sugar. You've got to have more pulses, legumes, beans, lentils, for example, split peas, black peas, black-eyed beans, navy beans, pinto beans, black beans, soybeans. You have to drink a lot of healthy, clean water and juices, especially the green juices. The green juice would be 12 ounces of celery, cucumber, and green apple. You can't have the dried fruit, but you can have pears. Yeah, you can have you can certainly have grapefruits. You can have apples, because those release their natural sugar slowly. And you also have to have, you're getting your protein, by the way, from your beans and your whole grains. You cannot have refined grains. You have to have whole grains. Stay away from breads, unless it's Ezekiel sprouted bread. Nut butters you can have, fresh-made almond butter, cashew, pistachio, coconut butter, walnut butter. Those are all terrific for you. That way you have a continuous flow of glucose throughout the cells and glycogen to stored muscle sugar, and that way you'll have energy without a problem. I would suggest magnetic therapy. It does make a difference. With a lot of people with foot pain, you get some magnets and wrap around the ankle and the feet and keep them on. You could also do pulse magnetic therapy, where you can set a pulse that every so many seconds, a particular wavelength of a pulse of magnetism goes into the foot, and that helps relieves the spasm. Magnesium also helps take out a lot of that spasm. There's also retinopathy, which is damage to the retina of the eye from diabetes, and it's the leading cause of blindness in the United States. And the incidence of blindness from diabetic retinopathy has dropped with use of laser surgery. Diabetic neuropathy, which is damage to the kidneys caused by diabetes, is quite common. And diabetic, what you're talking about, neuropathy, which is damage to the nerves caused by diabetes, usually affecting the peripheral nerves, such as those in the feet, the hands, and the legs, numbness, tingling, pain, and generally it's drugs, and that doesn't help you. So what do? You try to get those legs exercised. Even if you can't walk fast, move the legs with some resistance. In other words, if your husband's got the diabetes and you're sitting in front of him, have him put his feet in your hands, and then slowly, while he's sitting up, push his legs back towards his chest and forward, back and forward, back and forward. And that way you're getting blood flowing into that area. You're helping the whole circulatory system. And remember, diabetes increases coronary artery disease, very common. So I'd like to see the anti-inflammatories, because diabetes is a pro-inflammatory condition, so you want to take that which turns off inflammation. So I would be using steel-cut oatmeal in the morning with cinnamon, lots of cinnamon, cinnamon in your drinks too. I would also take the essential fatty acids. That's very important as well. And I would take it especially for the heart and for the circulatory system. Vitamin E, 2 to 3 times a day. Vitamin C, every 4 hours. Again, you have to do this gradually up to bowel tolerance. A huckleberry helps promote insulin production. Juniper berries help lower glucose levels. Also, bucha, B-U-C-H-U. Dandelion root, Uva ursi, U-V-A, U-R-S-I, and bilberry. And those are important. I found that the juices are good, and you do not raise your blood sugar with like blueberries, strawberries, raspberries. Those are terrific as well. Garlic is great. Sauerkraut is great. You get the probiotics in there, and you want the probiotics. Coenzyme Q10 protects your husband's heart. Zinc is important. B12, because it's needed to prevent diabetic neuropathy, 1 milligram per day. Magnesium at about 800 milligrams, important, because there's enzyme systems and pH balance, and magnesium protects against coronary artery spasms. And manganese at 5 milligrams. I would use about 50 grams of fiber a day. And maitake mushrooms, M-A-I-T-A-K-E, about 3 grams. That helps normalize blood sugar levels. And pycnogenol, P-Y-C-N-O-G-E-N-O-L, or grapeseed extract. It's one and the same. It contains a powerful antioxidant that enhance the activity of vitamin C and strengthens the connective tissue, and that's important. Also, bean pod, B-E-A-N-P-O-D-T, that helps your kidneys. Bitter melon, that's good for you also. And cedar berries, excellent for nourishing the pancreas. And dandelion root protects your liver. So those are some things that can help. Okay, but now I just saw that there's someone on the line. Someone I think you'll find interesting. His name is Bill Thompson. Hi, Bill.
Hey, how are you, Gary?
Good. What are you calling in for?
Well, I was listening to your comments about the diabetic neuropathy, and I had been suffering with that, as you know, so badly. If you never experienced, I want you to imagine somebody taking an ice pick and slamming it into your foot or into your ankle or into your toes and just wiggling it around. The pain is excruciating. And I had gone to my doctor, and she said to me, Bill, there's nothing you can do. You're going to just have to learn to live with it, and hopefully it won't require amputation of your toes, foot, or leg. But that's what it's coming to, and just get used to it. There's no cure for it. Well, I talked to you about it, and you invited me to go to the retreat, the recent retreat, which I did. And I arrived there in a wheelchair. Now, it's not that I can't walk. It's not that that's not the problem. I can walk. It's just that I have no balance because the nerves in your feet control the balance. So I have to use a wheelchair to get around or a walker. And I was there for the 2 weeks, and you put me on a protocol. And at the end of the 2 weeks, I was walking with a cane, which I thought was impossible. That would never happen. It was just positively unbelievable, and I do really appreciate it. It's one of the things that, well, one, you don't talk about health. You talk about life. You told me that I've got to change my life, not take a drug or think I'm going to take some bean sprouts and suddenly be better. It's the whole idea of my life. And you really changed it, Gary. You really did, and I do thank you so much. And the other people there, some with cancer and other kinds of problems, and to listen to them and how much you would help them was just it was just very impressive. And I do thank you so much.
Okay, I want to ask you a few questions. We don't have a lot of time, so please give me a short answer. When you arrived, I saw you. You arrived in a wheelchair. Were you in excruciating pain?
At that particular time, I was not.
Okay.
The pain came the next day.
Okay. How long had you had diabetic neuropathy pain?
10 years.
10 years. And what was the status of your physical condition prior to coming? What did your doctor suggest to you?
He suggested suggested I call the undertaker, because there really was very little that could be done. There is no medicine that's going to be able to help me.
I also remember that you were cachexic. You had wasted away. You had lost a substantial amount of weight and muscle mass.
Correct.
See. All right. This also had caused brain fog, brain problems, and other physical abnormalities as well. Is that correct?
Well, you pointed it out and showed me where it was, but when you're going through it on a very slow basis, you don't necessarily recognize it.
That's true of everyone suffering from it. Have you noticed a difference in your memory, cognition now?
Yes, absolutely.
At the end of the 2 weeks, were you able to walk without the assistance of the walker, and were you still in pain?
There was no pain whatsoever, and I still needed the cane for balance because my neuropathy hasn't disappeared, but it hasn't gotten any worse, and I think it's improved.
Did you start to feel new sensations in your feet?
Yes, definitely, especially my toes.
Okay, did you see blood circulation and hence the changing in the color of your skin from purple to more pink?
Definitely. My big toes were both purple. They are now back to normal skin color.
Did your doctor before coming suggest that you may have to have your leg amputated?
No, my feet and toes.
Feet and toes amputated. How are your feet and toes today?
Wonderful. I mean, I still have, it still has some neuropathy there. I can't feel everything I want to, but it's much, 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 much better.
So after 10 years of pain, discomfort, and diminishing health, you're on your way to recovery.
Yes. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
All right, Bill. All the best to you. Okay. Now, I want to, there was one of our listeners sent a letter here. Let me just read this one. This is from Vito. I won't give your last name because I don't know if you want it known. This I just read this morning. Let's see. Hello, Gary and staff, and thank you for all the great work you do. Wisdom is power, and all the hosts on PRN are powerful. I recently listened to the archive program of Gary's interview with Professor Guy McPherson and Kevin Hester. Of course, it was quite a shocker, and I felt as if I had just heard a dear friend who died. I was and still am shaken to the core at the implications of what was stated. I'm a regular listener to Dame Wigington's show, and he also reminds us every week just how dire the situation is for life on this fragile earth, whether it's geoengineering or GMOs or death by medicine or toxic vaccines or endless war or pesticides or G5 or addiction to fossil fuels or inept politicians or genocide, etc. The conclusion is always the same. A deadly or harmful action that is obviously wrong and deadly is encouraged and somehow profitable, and any attempt to correct it is vehemently resisted by the powers that be. Is it possible that all the multitude of things that destroy lives are by intent? Population control, guide stones, Agenda 21, Agenda 2030. I really hope that a program on the topic of planned population control is considered. As Gary and staff are the best at separating fact from fiction. Thanks again. Okay. By the way, none of the people called in. I was hoping people would call in the others. I'd like to hear from you on that. I do not believe, from all my research, that there is an intent to depopulate. There are people like Ted Turner, who has gone on the record, and Bill Gates and others, who believe that there should be a population control, but they do it, they're suggesting it from what they would consider a humanitarian perspective, that we have too many people, too many mouths to feed, and therefore we should start engaging in birth control and other ways of planning to have less people. All right, that's their perspective. What I believe is that there is no hidden agenda. I believe that what you have and what I've been able to uncover, and many others as well, is people who are seeking control or power outside of what would normally be considered legitimately gained. And they do it alone or in cabals of other groups who believe like them. If you attended one of the Bilderberg groups or one of the groups of elective people, elective not by, not elected, but they have been selected based upon their wealth and the influence they have in different industries, as policymakers, opinion leaders to join once a year at Davos and come together, these people only have one thing in common, and that is they all want more. In the process of wanting more, they want more from their limited perspective and the technocrats that fill their ears with what they should do. These technocrats have their own agenda. If it's pro-war, then they have to find that everything is a threat justifying more procurements for more weapons of war and more places to invade, more regimes to overtake and undermine or destabilize. If people die in the process, it was not the intent to cause a famine or to cause a cholera epidemic by the Nepal forces from the UN in Haiti. That was not the intent. The intent in Yemen is not to kill people through famine. It is to take back power of Yemen to the Saudi ruling group. That's the difference. If you want factory farming, you're going to be contributing to global warming. If you want organic, decentralized farming, you're actually helping saving the planet, especially if it's plant-based. That's the difference. So on the one, the world becomes a more unsafe place and people die and there's not enough food because it's not equitably distributed. And we've taken away many of the means for people and then we've caused their environment to be denatured. That's the effect of bad policy making. So what we have is not the agenda to actually do harm. It is the byproduct that comes with poorly thought through programs. Okay? We're out of time. I want to thank you all for sharing your thoughts and insights. I'll have Peter Koenig's former World Banking top person on to explain neoliberalism and how our entire body politic, Democrat and Republican, are both fully neoliberal, and how that then destroys the world. Do they intend to destroy the world? Not at all. Will they destroy the world by their neoliberalism? Absolutely. It's inevitable. So more on that tomorrow. Have a nice day.